long after the banquet in Matthew Levi's house, and not long after Jesus had been engaged in conversation by the disciples of John as to why he and his disciples were always eating while John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees were busy fasting. And Jesus explained to them his philosophy of life. He said, the friends of the bridegroom can't fast while the bridegroom is with them. The days will come when he'll be taken away from them, and then they will fast. But right then, something happened. As he was thus speaking, Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, rushed in. All of the accounts give the impression that he was urgent. One account in Matthew says he rushed in and kneeled. It said he kneeled before Jesus and made a request. One of the other accounts says that he fell on his face before the Lord. And he said to Jesus, "My daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hand on her and heal her." Matthew records that she was already dead. Another gospel says she was dying, and one says she was at the point of death. But she was so ill that this man rushed in and, it seems, interrupted the conversation between Jesus and the disciples of John. And with this interruption, we're introduced to another facet of the Lord's life, that of his healing ministry. And this was only one of hundreds, the one with Jairus' daughter. He went on, and we'll notice some things in a few moments about something that took place in between. But the healing of Jairus' daughter, which he did, was only one of hundreds of healings that Jesus performed while he was living here on earth. Others are referred to back in Matthew 4. He went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every infirmity among the people. And verse 24 there says, "So his fame spread throughout all Syria, and they brought him all the sick, those afflicted with various diseases and pains, demoniacs, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. And great crowds followed him from Galilee and from the Decapolis," that was an area across the Sea of Galilee, "and Jerusalem, south of the Galilee, and Judea, and from beyond the Jordan." So, from up in Syria to the Decapolis area, to Jerusalem, Judea, beyond the Jordan, all over this area, they began to follow Jesus because of this healing ministry. In Matthew, the 8th chapter, shortly after he had spoken the Sermon on the Mount, the Sermon on the Mount, traditionally, is supposed to have been delivered from a location west of the city of Tiberias. Now, there is a mountain there, and I forget, it's the Horns of Hattai. Is that right, Jim? Hattin? The Horns of Hattin, that's right. It looks like a saddle. And it is traditionally spoken that he delivered the message there. That's just about, well, you can see Tiberias. You overlook it. Tiberias from that vantage point. Shortly after he delivered the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus then went on up into Capernaum to his own city. And there it says that he went into the home of Simon Peter, whose house was in the city of Capernaum. And it there is listed, and now it's displayed, traditionally at least, as being right in front of the synagogue. There's a synagogue that sits on the same site as the synagogue did, and this is the second century synagogue, and we think, or they surmise, that the same location was the synagogue of Jesus' day. But the synagogue that's standing there now, the old ruins, is located, and it faces east and west, and Simon Peter's house is just down the street and on the left there. Of course, we don't know for sure that that is this house, but nevertheless, we do know that Simon had a house in Capernaum. And when Jesus returned from the Sermon on the Mount, he went into Simon Peter's house and found Simon's mother-in-law sick with a fever. And he laid his hands on her and healed her, and she got up and fixed them a meal. Then that evening, they brought to him many who were possessed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. That's Matthew chapter 8, verse 16. Mark's account of this event says that in the evening toward sunset. Luke says, while the sun was setting. Now, I don't know why all the emphasis on the exact scene, but all three of these gospel writers mention the time of day. And you can almost, if you'll close your eyes, you can reconstruct the scene. Perhaps after the evening meal and the dishes were washed and the cool breeze from off of the Sea of Galilee began to blow in the city, it seems as though the whole city gently made its way toward the house, and there they found Jesus, and they brought their sick, and it reminds me of sheep coming to their shepherd. In fact, it made me think of Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. And how he talks about the shepherd anointing their head with oil and their cup running over. It reminded me of sheep returning to the shepherd after a day's grazing and coming in toward evening, or as the sun was setting, or as Mark says, toward sundown. And they came to Jesus, and he healed them all. In the next chapter, it just simply says that when these people came and were looking for healing and looking for help, that Jesus looked upon them with compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd, helpless and harassed, and they looked to him for help, and he gave it. He never disappointed people. He gave them that which they were needing, not always perhaps what they were wanting, but he gave them even better than that what they were needing. Most of Jesus' healings took place in the city of Capernaum and in the area around it. Now you wonder why that's true. And yet, if you look at one verse, turn to Matthew, the 11th chapter. Much of this tonight is in the book of Matthew. The reason why I say most of his healings were performed in Capernaum, in Matthew, the 11th chapter, then he began, in verse 20, he began to upbraid the cities where most of his mighty works had been done, because they did not repent. Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I tell you, it shall be more tolerable on the day of judgment for Tyre and Sidon than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you be exalted to heaven? You'll be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I tell you that it shall be more tolerable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom than for you. So we're forced to the conclusion from this text, and also simply from the sheer evidence that you have as to where these miracles of healing took place, to conclude that they took place around the city of Capernaum. Why? Well, because Jesus' personal ministry was not begun until he moved to Capernaum. Immediately after the baptism that Jesus experienced at the hand of John the Baptist and John's imprisonment, Jesus, it says, moved to Capernaum. His life really consists of three areas. He lived in the city of Bethlehem. He was born there. Matthew records all of these events too. Back in Matthew, the 2nd chapter. Now, Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judah in the days of Herod the king. That's Matthew 2:1. And then you remember how he was taken by Joseph, his father and his mother, when he was about a year old. He was taken into Egypt. And he stayed there about 2 years, because Jesus was born about 3 years before the death of Herod. And he was about a year old before they fled. And so we surmise that because of the announcement that was made to Joseph after the death of Herod, that it's safe to return now. And so that would have been 2 more years. So Jesus was about 3 years old when his parents took him to the city of Nazareth in Galilee, and they took up residence in that city. Jesus lived in Nazareth from the age 3 till about the age 30. It was at the age 30 that he moved to the city of Capernaum. And verse 23 we find of chapter 2 of Matthew, it tells about how they went and dwelt in the city called Nazareth. And then look at chapter 4 and verse 13 of Matthew. Verse 12 says, now when he heard that John had been arrested, he withdrew into Galilee, and leaving Nazareth, he went and dwelt in Capernaum by the sea, in the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali, that what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. So Jesus, really, his personal ministry was conducted in the city of Capernaum. But now the other two cities that we've just read, where most of his mighty works were done, the city of Chorazin and the city of Bethsaida, these three little cities or three towns formed a triangle. Capernaum was on the northwest, the north-northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee. It was a seaport. Chorazin was due north, just about 3 or 4 miles, and just a bit to the west. Bethsaida was across the top part of the Sea of Galilee, over on the eastern shore, on the other side of the Jordan River. It wasn't more than 3 or 4 miles either. And so we find this little triangle, this little cluster of cities, in which Jesus did most of his mighty works. Bethsaida, incidentally, was the home of Philip and of Simon Peter and Andrew and Nathanael. John, the first chapter, discusses this and tells that these men lived in the city of Bethsaida. And so we find these particulars. They're not all that important, but it's interesting to help us locate where Jesus did most of his mighty works and where he performed these signs. There are some interesting things that emerge in the life of Jesus around these healings. We see some emotions that surface. We see some attitudes that come to light in his life. Shortly after he returned from the Sermon on the Mount, in fact, the next event that's recorded was the healing of a leper. But then he came on back to his own town, and a centurion, a Roman centurion, met him and said, my servant is dying. And Jesus said, I'll come and heal him. And the man said, well, sir, that won't be necessary. If you'll just say the word, my servant will be healed. Because he said, I'm also a man under authority. And I say to my servant, go, and he goes. And I say to my slave, do this, and he does it. And he said, if you'll just say the word, my servant will be healed. And it says that Jesus marveled. Now that expresses an emotion of Jesus. He was awed by the amount of faith that this man possessed in him. And he turned around, and you see the bodily movement even of Jesus. He turned and said to those people that were following, who were behind him, the man was here, the centurion from Rome, and the other people were here. And it says he turned around and said to those that were following him, I tell you, I've not found faith like this even in Israel. And he said, the day is coming when people will come from the east and the west and will sit at the table with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, but the sons of the kingdom will be cast out into outer darkness. We find this attitude of marveling. He was shocked. And we find that that's something that simply took place in his life. That it's interesting to notice his reaction at this point. But again, we find in Mark the 3rd chapter in verse 5 that he became angry. All of these emotions that we're going to notice center around these healings. In Mark the 3rd chapter, this happened to be one of the bones of contention. It was a Sabbath day. And the man there in the synagogue had his hand withered. And Jesus asked them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save a life or to kill it? And they wouldn't answer him, because they knew that they would indict themselves if they did. And it says, looking about upon them with anger, because of the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, come here. And the man came there, and he stretched forth his hand and was healed. Again, he became frustrated on one occasion at his own disciples. About 18 months before his death, he had been up in Caesarea Philippi, and there Peter confessed him as being the Christ. 6 days later, they went up into a high mountain apart, and Jesus was transfigured before Peter, James, and John. He told them, don't you tell a soul what you've seen. They came back down out of the mountain. The rest of the disciples were there with a crowd of people. And a man rushed to Jesus as he came down from the mountain and said, Master, help me. My son. And he began to tell this story about how his son was an epileptic and how he was cast into the fire at times and he despaired of his life. And listen, he's an epileptic. He suffers terribly, for often he falls into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples and they could not heal him. Now listen to this statement. It reflects a frustration on the part of Jesus that comes nearer than any other, perhaps, of his emotions that identifies him with us. Jesus answered, O faithless and perverse generation, he's speaking to his own disciples now, How long am I to be with you? But he revises that and says, how long am I to bear with you? In other words, how long can I stand you? Bring him here to me. And Jesus rebuked him, and the demon came out of him, and the boy was cured instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, why couldn't we cast it out? And he said to them, because of your little faith. For truly I say to you, if you had faith as the grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, be uprooted and cast into the sea, and it would move, and nothing would be impossible to you. We find him becoming very frustrated with his own disciples because of their lack of faith. On another occasion, we find him experiencing compassion for a widow. I don't know where the city of Nain is. The map doesn't give it. I don't know when it happened because the time isn't listed. But it was one of those accounts that was just simply thrown into the midst of all the other accounts of his healing. And it says that a great crowd was following him, and they came to the gate. And it seems that the people were coming out of the city through the gate to the burial grounds. And it says a great crowd from the city was following this burial procession. And then the writer Luke describes that the boy that had died was the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And we see an emotion surface there on Jesus' part when it says he was moved with compassion for her. And he went up and said, don't cry. He stopped the procession and he spoke to this young dead man and said, young man, I tell you, get up. And the young man was raised. He sat up. And he gave him, it says, he gave him back to his mother. Well, that emotion in Jesus touches our hearts again. In Luke, the 17th chapter, in verse 17, Luke always records Jesus going up to Jerusalem for some reason or other. I'm not sure why. But Luke, it's a favorite expression, on the way to Jerusalem, verse 11, he met a colony of lepers. A colony of lepers. They kind of stayed in groups, and they stood at a distance, stood afar off. And they lifted up their voice. They had to yell at him, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when Jesus saw them, he just said, go show yourselves to the priest. Now, he had to yell as loud as they had to yell to get him to hear them. He had to yell that loud to get them to hear him. So we know here even the level of his voice. They had to lift up their voice because they were at a distance. And so whenever he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priest. And they took off running. And as they ran, they were cleansed. One of these men turned around and ran back and fell on his face before Jesus and thanked him. Jesus records disappointment here. Were there not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. About a month before Jesus was killed, he was over in a little town, Enon, near Salem, in a hideout. They were looking for him to kill him. He had fled Jerusalem and was there really as a refugee, as a fugitive. And he received a message one day from Mary and Martha that said, come quickly, your friend is sick. He stayed there for 2 more days, and then he and his disciples went back to the city to take care of the needs of this friend. When they came to the town of Bethany, where Mary and Martha and Lazarus lived, Lazarus had already died. It had taken them a couple of days to walk from Enon near to Salem. They'd gotten the message that he was sick. He died. They made the 2-day journey, but by the time they got back, Lazarus had already been dead for 4 days. And they stopped outside the city of Bethany, the little village. Martha, being the initiative one, ran out to meet Jesus and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And he conversed there with her for a few moments, and then she left and went and told Mary. She whispered to her that the Lord is here. Mary got up and ran also to Jesus, and she came with the same message. Lord, if you had been here, our brother wouldn't have died. And then he said, where have you laid him? And they said, come with us. And they took him. It says, as he looked at the people that were there with Mary and Martha and saw the Jews crying and Mary and Martha crying, verse 35 of that chapter 11 says, Jesus wept. Now, here was another one of his emotions that surfaced at the time of some of these healings. But not only do we see these interesting things regarding him that encourage our hearts, we also see dimensions of his power that stagger our minds. In John the 4th chapter, a ruler from Capernaum, again, while Jesus was in Cana, Cana's about 5 or 6 miles east and south of Capernaum, Jesus was in Cana where he performed his first miracle, the turning of the water to wine. This ruler from Capernaum came to Cana and said to Jesus, "Come and heal my son." And Jesus said, "Will you not believe unless you see signs?" The official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." In other words, he didn't have time to talk about it. Jesus just said to him, "Well, you go on, your son will live." And the man believed him and turned around and went back home. His servants were running out to meet him and they said, "Your son lives." He said, "What time did he begin to mend?" And they said, "About the 7th hour. And the man was stunned. He said, "That's the hour that he spoke to me and said, 'Your son will live.'" And it said, he and all of his house believed. Well, the thing that's so startling on this occasion was that Jesus didn't even have to be there in order to heal. I don't know what you would call it as far as telepathic powers and all, but this man, not only did he have to not be there or not have to be there, he didn't have to know where the son was. He knew it. He didn't have to be led there and taken to the house and all. He could just simply say, "Your son will live." And his all-knowing mind could do the same thing for that boy in Capernaum that he had done with Simon Peter and the piece of money in the fish's mouth when he told Peter to go cast a hook into the sea and the first fish you take up will have a shekel in it. And the same thing that he did there, he did with Nathanael when he told him, "I saw you standing under that fig tree before Philip called you." And it begins to kind of get to you, what kind of a man are we dealing with? While he was talking with John's disciples about his eating so much or so often, and when Jairus came and said, "Come quick, my child, my daughter, she's dying, she's at the point of death," he said, "I'll be there." And he turned around and started following. And this large crowd was pressing along with him. And a woman who had had a hemorrhage for 12 years came up behind him in the crowd with this intention. She said, "If I can just touch the hem of his garment," and no doubt it was a difficult job to even get there because of the press of the people. She said, "If I can just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be healed." And so she reached and touched his garment, and she was healed. He didn't even know that, you see, he didn't have to know. It seems like he was a walking dynamo of power. And the only thing that kept some people from being healed was that they were not grounded. You know, you can catch hold of an electrical wire, and if you're not grounded, there's no power going to get you. This woman was grounded in faith. When Jesus said, "Who touched me?" Peter said, "Lord, what do you mean, who touched you? Look at these people pressing around on you. And you ask me, who touched me? Who touched you?" Jesus said, "Someone touched me." And the woman, knowing what had happened in her, came and fell down before him and said, and she told the whole story. She said, "I've been sick for 12 years. I've spent all the money I've got. I'm no better." She said, "I just knew that if I could touch your garment, I would be healed." He said to her, "Your faith has made you well." And the woman went off with thanksgiving at this great healing that she had experienced. Well, the dimensions of his power. He didn't have to be there. He didn't even have to know that the healing was going to take place. It was just instantaneous, something there that he had that was flowing through him that he could do. And then when he came and returned from Enon near to Salem and healed Lazarus, that was a 4-day ordeal. The decomposition of his body had already taken place. Martha, the very practical one, said, "Lord, he smells. He'll be stinking." 4 days, you don't just open up a tomb of a 4-day dead man. But it was no more of a problem for Jesus to reconstruct decomposed matter than it was for him to rearrange disordered matter. What kind of a man is he that can do things like this? Well, not only in himself do we see interesting things emerge, there were interesting responses in other people. I'm just going to be able to mention these just very briefly. You'll have to reconstruct these scenes yourself. There were some bad responses. The Pharisees and the Herodians, on the Sabbath day when Jesus healed the man who had the withered hand and looked about upon them with anger, the Pharisees went out and joined up with the Herodians, their arch enemies, to try to destroy Jesus. They hated him. Jealousy also played a part. In Luke, the 4th chapter, Jesus went back to Nazareth and went to church one day on the Sabbath at the synagogue service, and they gave him the scroll to read. He was a well-known figure. He had been brought up there for about, how many years? 27 years he had lived there. And they gave him the scroll, and he stood up and read from Isaiah and said, "Today this has been fulfilled in your ears." And they were amazed, and it says everyone spoke well about him. But then he said, "Perhaps you're going to say to me, 'Physician, heal yourself. The things that we have heard you do in Capernaum, why don't you do them here?'" And then he told them about the widow of Zarephath, and how that when nothing happened to those who were in Judea and Galilee, that there was a woman of Zarephath who had been given some food during a drought in the Old Testament times. And he accused them, really, of being unworthy of God's blessings. And they became so angry, they rushed out of the city, took him to a brow of the hill, and that brow is still there, you can see it, and attempted to throw him off. They were so enraged at his accusations, and they were jealous of what he was doing. At the resurrection of Lazarus, at raising him up from the dead, it says that the people, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, were just infuriated. They were so, they tried to put Lazarus back to death. They said, "We're going to just kill him too, because of him, many of the Jews are believing on him." And then you find them saying, "Look at it. Look, what are we going to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation." Jealousy motivated them. Pilate knew that they had delivered him up because of envy. And then on over in chapter 12 of John, in verse 19, it says, the Pharisees then said to one another, and you get the impression that they were standing up on an overlooking place, maybe a second-story balcony. This is the impression I get. It doesn't say that. But the Pharisees said to one another, this was at the great triumphal entry. He was riding on a donkey, and the people were putting palm leaves and throwing their garments down on the ground, and Jesus was riding on this donkey into the city of Jerusalem. And the Pharisees said, "Look, you see that we can do nothing. Look, the whole world has gone after him." And they sat there in their jealousy and in their envy, watching Jesus be the center of attraction. That was one of the responses that came from his healings, because these people who were there in the city at that time, who were following him, had come there because they had heard that he had healed Lazarus. And this was built around this scene of the raising of Lazarus from the dead. Even visions of ghosts and bad dreams accompanied these healings. Herod, when he heard of all the things that Jesus was doing, said, "It's John the Baptist, the one I beheaded. He has been raised from the dead, and he's doing all these things." Claudia, the wife of Pilate, while Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat that early that morning on Friday, she sent a message to him, a note, and said, "Don't have anything to do with this righteous man. I've suffered many things because of him this very day in a dream." It was early in the morning. She had been awakened, and she knew Pilate was gone, and she had dreamed about Jesus that very night, and she sent this message and said, "Don't have anything to do with him." A lot of things happened in the minds of people because of the influence of Jesus. But there were some good responses. I love to think of this point at which Jesus seemed to have less control over things than he did at any other point in his life. Now, that may sound odd, but those people whom he healed and told them, "Don't you tell a soul." Matthew records it. So does Luke. In Luke 5, it says that he healed these people and told them and warned them, strictly charging them, "Don't you tell a soul. Just go show yourself to the priest." But it says they went out all over that district and just broadcast what Jesus had done. So much so that he couldn't even get into the cities. He had to stay outside in the fields and in the valleys and in the places where there was no, where the city was not. And then Luke says that the more he warned them, the more they went out and broadcast it. Now, it's odd, and it's peculiar, and it's very true to life. Had the record said that the people who were healed did exactly like Jesus said and went on home, you'd almost suspect it as not being a real record. But when it says that while they didn't anymore listen to him, here was the Lord of the universe who had just finished healing them, giving them a command. They couldn't obey it. They were so exuberant. This is what you call uncontrollable joy. They were so overjoyed with what had happened. They didn't even hear him. And they went out and just told everybody, look what Jesus did for me. And there they went, and the record and the response came in that way. They praised God. About 10 days before his death, they came through the city of Jericho, and blind Bartimaeus was there. And you know the story of how blind Bartimaeus set up a ruckus. He said, Jesus, son of David. They said, shh, be quiet. He said, Jesus, son of David. And he got his attention. And he stopped the whole procession and said, bring him here to me. And they said, be of good cheer, Bartimaeus. He's calling for you. Bartimaeus got up and ran to Jesus. And Jesus said, what would you like for me to do for you? And he said, Lord, if I could just see. And so he gave him his eyesight that day. He touched him and healed him and said, Bartimaeus glorified God. And it says all the people praised God for what he was doing. That was one of the responses. Faith was born in some. Nicodemus came to him one night and said, Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God, because nobody could do the things you're doing unless God were with him. John, the 9th chapter, shows a man who was not a rabbi. He was just a commoner. He was not a man that really wanted to believe. He didn't have that in his mind. He just knew that this man had opened his eyes. He put mud on his eyes and told him to go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And he did. And he was the most unconcerned person you could imagine about what the implications of this were. He didn't care what the implications were. He had been healed. He could see. He had never been able to see before. He had been blind from birth. The Pharisees kept pestering him. What do you say about this man? What did he do to you? And from the point where he just simply said, well, he opened my eyes. He put mud on it and sent me to wash. And I washed and I see. And they said, well, what do you say about it? And they said, well, he's a prophet. And then they didn't believe that he'd been healed. And they called his parents. And this drama of watching faith be forced or coerced almost upon this man because of him having to draw some conclusions. And then finally, it came to the place that he just simply said, look, I've already told you what he did to me once. Do you want to hear it again? What do you want to do? Become his disciples? And then they became very angry with him and said, you're his disciple. We're disciples of Moses. We know where Moses came from. We don't know where this fellow came from. He said, this is indeed a marvel that you don't know where he came from, and yet he opened my eyes. He said, from the beginning of the world, it's never been heard that anybody ever opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't do anything. And we see that faith all of a sudden just burst forth in this beautiful flower. And the fragrance of it filled that whole area. And they kicked him out of the synagogue. And Jesus came and said, all conversed with him and reclaimed him and loved him and told him to, in essence, to enjoy your eyesight. He looked up and saw him. He said, do you believe on the Son of Man? And this man said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? Jesus said, you've both seen him, and it's he that's speaking to you right now. And he fell down and worshiped him. Faith had been born. Well, there was renewal. New lease on life. Mary Magdalene, in whom there had been 7 demons cast out, or from whom there had been 7 demons. She was probably a prostitute, a woman of ill repute. The woman in John 8, Jesus forgave her of her sin, called her to a higher plane of living, sent her away renewed to a new plane of life. All of these things centered around his healings, his ministry. What kind of a man are we dealing with? Compassionate, could cry, he could be angry, he could be frustrated, he could marvel at people, he loved them, he spent his life for them, they said he's beside himself. He ignored his eating needs on occasions whenever there were too many patients to heal. He just kept healing and kept healing, and they just kept bringing them. He worked after sundown as the sun was setting. All these interesting circumstances and colorings in the life of the Lord. What was the purpose of it all? Matthew said it was to fulfill what Isaiah said about him. He's taken our infirmities and borne our diseases. Surely he has carried our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that made us whole. And with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. John said Jesus did many other signs that are not written in this book. But these are written that you might believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and that believing you might have life in His name. That's why this series on the life of Jesus, so that you might believe and might have life through His name. I believe that Jesus is what He claims to be. I came to that conclusion some years ago. I can't put Him anywhere else. Where do you put Him? Faith in Him will bring you to life eternal. We won't be here long, even if you live out your life and die at 70 or 80 or 90. You won't be here long. Where are you going to go then? Tonight, if you're here and you're not a Christian, you'd like to express your faith. It may be that your faith tonight, like that of the blind man's, is finally blossomed and it's ready to bear fruit. If you'll come down the aisle, confess your faith that you believe that He's the Son of God, we'll take you and immerse you in water for the forgiveness of sins, raise you up to walk this new life as one of His thousands and millions of followers have. Would you do that?